Does any of this scare you? Like, do you see any repercussions of this when it gets, again, mass adoption? What is it like to, like, work on a cutting-edge technology? What's the next thing that we should all be very excited for?
I was just mind-blown. You can just use this spatial canvas. That it's something you never experienced before. Can we improve people's ability to smell specific things by exposing them to it through VR training?
Do you know anything about VR that maybe the public doesn't know?
This mixed reality spectrum is a necessary advancement to humankind.
Oh my God. That's insane. For people that don't know you, can you give like just a short background, like your interest in VR, your passion, everything you've done for it, like where your study is, all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. The short summary, I'm a PhD student at Arizona State University. I do research with virtual and augmented reality technology. I think of it as two pillars for my core research interests. One pillar is multi-sensory interfaces. So we recently did a study where we integrated the sense of smell into virtual reality. We've done other types of perceptual modalities, such as tactile, so feeling things. Audio and visual is naturally part of the VR headset. And some preliminary discussions on gustatory, which is a sense of taste, but I'm not the right person to talk about that. The other pillar of research that I focus on is 3D data streaming. This was kind of over time I developed that interest. Naturally, with any type of multi-sensory technology you use, the data is going to be spatial and temporal, hence spatio-temporal. Mm-hmm. And so it's 3D in nature. And I want to get an understanding of how you send data to and from devices or to and from people, essentially. Wow. So that motivated me to get into 3D data streaming. Right now, our focus is on LiDAR, since most mobile devices have these 3D sensors equipped with them. As for what led me here, I tried virtual reality. The Nintendo Pip-Boy back in 1999, a very classic headset. Mm. I didn't even know how to use it, how it functioned. My parents bought it for me, and I really wish we kept it because it's an antique.
Yeah.
By the time, we didn't know how to use it, so we returned it. But that was kind of like the introduction to wearing something for me. Then I want to say around 2006, I think it was, Iron Man came out. And, you know, that changed a lot of kids' lives, myself included. So that introduced me to this cool realm of like what it's like to be a techie. Then I would say, we fast forward to college. I have accepted the fact that I am a techie. I'm doing software engineering as my major, but my interest, like the core area I want to focus on tech, wasn't really defined. And it was through a few colleagues that I went and tried out virtual reality for the first time. And it resonated so well for me. There's a wonderful experience called Tilt Brush. It's basically a 3D drawing tool. And I was just mind blown that you can just use this spatial canvas. That it's something you never experienced before. It clicked to me because I have a background in art. My parents have artistic habits, skills that they've inherited, sure. So to say. And so I always appreciate art, and I really like tech, and that felt like a unification of them. And so it clicked with me. I loved it, and I wanted to pursue it deeper. And it was Google Earth that was the second follow-up experience that really clicked with me, where it's like, it's not just arts and crafts, but this is productivity. This is a utility. And then that led me to working on VR. I went to hackathons. I fortunately met somebody who introduced me to their advisor, and hence connected me to a research lab. That lab is led by Dr. Robert Leekum Wong. It's called Meteor Studio at Arizona State University. I started working there about 4 or 5 years ago. This was near the end of my undergrad, and then I decided to do my PhD.
Wow. Perfectly said, first of all.
Thank you.
Yeah. And second of all, though, like, there's a lot to dive in there. I do want to like start at the beginning, too, because I think that is like super important to go through. Like, because I'm with you. Like, I saw same exact thing, same exact devices. I remember also like going, I don't know if you remember, like, I mean, they're still there, but like if you go into like arcades and they had like those helmet games, like literally like pretty like very basic virtual reality. But for the time, I thought that was like, that was incredible. I was like, oh my, like you can look around like this. I mean, it's massive and clunky, but you put this on your head and then you can like turn 360. I mean, that's pretty cool. And then, yeah, the gun was like included in that. Like that whole thing was just amazing to me. And again, that was like 90s, early 2000s.
Right.
And then again, fast forward like 25 years later and like here we are, and it's just getting better and better and better. Like it's amazing.
Interesting. I like that you bring up the arcade. VR has been around for like since the 70s. People have experimented with it. There's a really, the researcher that coined the term virtual reality, actually, his name was Dr. Jaron Lanier. I might have butchered that last name a bit, but if you look him up, you might recognize him. He was in The Social Dilemma. He's the guy with all the dreads.
Yeah.
He actually started a virtual reality, worked, I think, with NASA to create the first VR headsets.
What?
It was either NASA or Microsoft, but I know he ended up doing research with Microsoft. But yeah, it dates really far back. The problem was that it wasn't interactive in the sense that it required high compute and it was so expensive.
Yeah.
And the convergent advancements and convergence of different technologies kind of bring us to where we are today.
Yeah. I mean, that's insane. I did not know that. I've seen The Social Dilemma probably three times just because I love that documentary.
That's him.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Well, he's such a character. About completely different thing.
Yeah,
too.
True.
Yeah,
and he's such a character.
Such
like
a character.
You would have no idea.
Yep.
That's amazing. Awesome. Do you want to pull this just a little bit closer
to
your mouth?
Sorry.
Yeah, you can just like push it like that. That's perfect. Awesome. So like, what is it about VR specifically? Is it, if it is just one thing, but is it the engineering, the application of it? Like the novelty of the experience, like what is it that draws to, because I have my own answer, but like what is it about this kind of virtual reality, this expansion or kind of addition of universes that you go through? Like what is it about that that is so appealing to you that you've kind of pretty much dedicated your life to thus far? Like why that?
There's this really cool scene. If you've ever seen the movie Blade Runner 2049, there's a scene where this kind of Doctor Who generates artificial dreams for the robots. The androids. She uses this weird device where she's like mixing reality in front of her eyes. Now, before then, I obviously had this interest in VR, but I think that that's an excellent realization of why I like VR. It feels like this medium to which you can synthesize reality. You can take pieces of it you like and advance it, or you could take pieces you don't like and get rid of it. Yeah. Or even more importantly, you can share your experiences with others. I think this becomes really powerful if we are to become interplanetary species, which is a huge jump. But if we want to explore different places, not all humans have necessarily the capabilities, or they might have certain disabilities that prevent them from pursuing certain actions. Mm-hmm. But through virtual reality, that becomes a lot more possible, whether that be tele-remoting into a robot or whatever might you. But there's new ways to experience reality. And I think that this is the medium to get us there.
That's amazing. Yeah, it sounds like, to me, it sounds like application is kind of like
the application's huge,
like utility of it. I don't think the mass knows this. Like that's the thing, is I think they see it kind of more like they're more in the novelty basket. Like they just kind of see a different cool thing to try, and they see what's happening with like metaverse and so forth and that kind of virtual reality things. And it's like, okay, you can kind of be wherever you want to be. Like that's kind of interesting. You can be there with friends eventually and so forth. But I think you're seeing it in a very different light completely. That is much more like advancement of the human race on like, this is how we're supposed to use
it. Yeah, I really think it, not just virtual, but just this mixed reality spectrum is a necessary advancement to humankind.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, just by knowing you for these years, like you've kind of shown me, again, without you, I think I would still be in that basket.
Oh, yeah.
Of just like,
awesome.
Yeah, where it's just like, again, kind of just a novelty tech, like, oh, this is interesting, but I don't know where this is going. But knowing you, it kind of shows this window of like, well, this is what's possible. Like, this isn't just like some, you know, silly thing we're working on. Like, this is something that can advance us as a civilization. And that's so enlightening to see, because again, the mass doesn't see it like that. They really don't.
No, don't get me wrong. I also love the application side of it. I love the entertainment, the gaming, and I think that's necessary. I think gaming has advanced all technologies. So I fancy that area as well.
Yeah. And speaking of gaming too, like I don't know if you've seen like the new Unreal Engine, that kind of like crazy graphics. Like I'm kind of jumping ahead here in the future a little bit, but like I want to know, like, because you know more than anyone I know in my personal life, but like how far do you think we are from like Unreal Engine like level graphics into the VR experience? Are we far from that?
No, not at all, actually. That's a great question too. So there's some really talented researchers in Microsoft, at Google, perhaps Apple, though they don't publish as much. But they're all working on this problem. And there's a really good kind of workshop paper, I think it is, by a guy named Dr. Eduardo Cuervo. Awesome researcher for anyone who's interested in reading his work. He had a paper titled, What Does It Take to Make like Lifelike or Realistic Virtual Reality? Which is essentially the question you asked. It takes a lot of cloud computing. It takes advancements in the architecture of the devices, so the chipsets themselves, managing the energy consumption as on device, and knowing how to offload compute efficiently to a cloud device. Now, we're in terms of a timeline, a rough estimate, I would say having Unreal Engine 5 equivalent graphics in a VR experience is less than 5 years away.
Really?
As a matter of fact, I've seen VR experiences. Like I've been fortunate to go to other VR developers, VR gurus, as some might call them, to experience what they've worked on or stuff that they've come across. And I remember it was an HTC Vive. This is like a 2016 headset. Mm-hmm. The resolution of the headset itself, it's not that high. But I saw somebody, an artist or photogrammetry artist. Photogrammetry is where you basically take different viewpoint pictures and stitch them together to generate a 3D model. It's a process used for 3D reconstruction. He went through the tombs in Egypt and reconstructed it. So he got permission from the government, did it. We'll use a DLSR camera. So it's very high resolution, high quality imagery, which generates a high quality model. And so I got to walk through this, and this was, I tried it at the time, it was 2018, but it's all 2016 technology.
Yeah.
And it was more realistic than half the VR experiences I see today. And I was blown away. And that's when I realized, like, oh, it's much further along than we actually think. It's just, you have to get access to the right content. Now to generalize that for everybody, that's where I think it's a few more years, but we're getting a lot closer. And what you're going to see this year probably, or especially next year, when Meta releases their next headset, which is a pro model, it's going to have much higher resolution, rumored to be 2K or 4K resolution.
Wow.
Full color pass through. So it's red, green, blue. Like, you just switch to augmented reality, then bam, back to VR. Oh. So much closer than you'd think. It's a mixture of different things. It's a convergence of different things. It's a convergence of cloud computing, advancements in the chipsets of the devices, and then the advancements in optics on the headsets themselves, because you need different types of optical elements on your headset to render higher quality imagery. And one thing that helps a lot is foveated tracking. So wherever your eyes are, you know where to focus the resolution or the quality of the content. And that means you don't have to worry about the peripheral frames, or peripheral pixels in this case. Peripheral pixels, not peripheral frames. So you don't have to worry about those, which means you get energy savings there.
Right.
And you devote that to the focus area of the user.
Would that be equivalent to, like, I know in, like, you know, like the perspective of when you're in a game, like for gaming right now, they'll only render what the character sees.
Very similar.
Right?
Yeah.
Just, I'm guessing, to save power, to save computing and so forth.
Yeah. No, okay. That's very similar. And what they do in gaming, it's called occlusion culling. Mm-hmm. So it's basically whatever's in your viewport, you render, and whatever isn't, you don't even notice it. And it's actually really cool if you look up visualizations of it, of how they generate that. So it's just a fun thing to look at.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, and that's just gaming. I think, yeah, virtual reality, I'm sure, has its entire slew of different kind of, you know, barriers and hurdles you have to go through. But it's nice to know that we're well on our way. And with that whole, like, you know, new headsets coming out and so forth, like, personally, I mean, you're in this world more than me, so maybe you know, but I don't believe VR in general has mass adoption. Like, I just don't think it does. People have it, you know. I think if you do have it, though, you're kind of an enthusiast, right? Like, you're kind of, you want to dive into VR. I don't think the average Joe out there just, like, has a VR headset yet. So I want to say, like, do you think this headset coming out would be, like, the thing to bring it to mass adoption? Or what is it? Like, what will bring it, like, VR and AR maybe, to mass adoption? Like, what would be that thing?
I think it's a suite of software. The hardware itself is technically there. For the most part, it's there. I mean, more advancements are necessary to make it higher quality and to accommodate people have different requirements. Some people get easily motion sick, for example, because it's not rendering at a high enough frame rate. And the latency to process the rendering is above 33 milliseconds, so that makes them nauseous. So there's challenges there, sure. But in terms of the Quest 2 right now, that's like the de facto standard VR headset that is capable of doing cloud-based rendering, so you can either use your PC or some cloud server to do all the rendering for you, so it's high resolution and streams it to your headset. So we already have that capability. It has hand tracking on it. You can attach different peripheral devices. There's spatial consistency, so it memorizes your environment. Yeah. It does spatial scanning, so like it has situational awareness slowly but surely. So it's an excellent piece of hardware, but what's kind of lacking in terms of, like, why aren't everyday users on this, it's really, I think, consumer applications. There's a lot of entertainment, meditation, sports-related stuff. Mm-hmm. I think sports is going to be a big driver, so long as it's invested in heavily, because a lot of people are starting to work out in VR. I myself do it once every other week or so. I just do boxing.
Oh, yeah.
But I think it where it would become especially useful is if it's a part of the workplace, because the remote conferencing, teleconferencing, Zoom call equivalent type thing in VR, there's a lot more to work with there. For example, even our discussion right now, there's certain elements of human discussion, like your body language and such, and the presence that really adds to it. I think VR gets us closer there than a Zoom call does.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm sure anyone watching can agree, like, a Zoom call is, like, maybe 30% of the communication aspect. Like, truly, like, seeing the 3D person, like, or rendering of that, like, does so much for the communication aspect of it. And I agree with you. I think it's nice to know, because, like, I personally didn't know that the hardware is that great already. Like, from what I've seen, I think maybe the most impressive thing I've seen is, like, Half-Life Alyx, which is awesome. Super impressive. Yeah. Super impressive. But I'm kind of in that group where I get a little nauseous. I can't do it for more than like 30 minutes or else I get, it's just like, it's too much for me. But I agree that maybe software application is the way to go. Is there maybe, I think you already answered it with like the workplace thing, but is there an industry that like doesn't have VR that could absolutely like use it? Like it'd be essential and that would even spring it forward in its development?
There's probably a couple. I mean, for one, there's a lot of industries that you'd be surprised they do utilize VR or more so augmented reality. I think that that's becoming more of a commodity thing for people to utilize.
Mm-hmm.
But an industry that I think would greatly benefit from virtual reality. I mean, it's kind of cliche to say it, I guess, but I would say education, specifically online classes. I think that there's a missing element of online classes where you don't feel like you're with other students. And I strongly believe virtual reality could satisfy that because then you're in a virtual classroom with a bunch of students and that adds levels of presence and engagement that you're not going to get elsewhere.
Yeah. And you're seeing all the students around you, same similar environment, I'm guessing, or maybe it's something completely different that even works better. I think that'd be great too. Why do you think people are like so avidly against the idea of that, of a virtual class like that? Because to me, that makes so much more sense. It's like, listen, it's either this screen in front of them in a virtual reality setting or their phone being distracted during class. Yeah. Like that seems like so much more dangerous to me than just being in a virtual setting where you don't have that option of being distracted per se.
Yeah, it's tough. My mom, for example, she's pretty against the virtual reality stuff like that. I mean, she's happy, she's supportive, but she thinks it takes the human element out of stuff. Yeah. And that's a tough argument. I can't say I have a good rebuttal against that. But to that, I'd say what you just said, it's much better alternative than just a 2D screen because at least you're getting some form of communication and engagement with others that it satisfies a missing element of human communication. I mean, as a result of COVID, all these kids are doing online classes, let's say elementary, grade school on up, right? That's an important age for having that in-person or interactive, at least communication with others. Virtual reality can delightfully target those use cases and benefit all those kids. So in fairness, I think it's better than what we currently have. Does it supplement or satisfy what in-person does? No, definitely not.
Right.
I don't know what it takes to get there. That's kind of what motivates me on the multi-sensory realms because I think then you can start to feel things, but that's a different discussion.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm with you 100% there. I don't know, maybe it's just a little bit more future forward thinking, but like, I don't know. It's like, you might have like a standard of education at that point. Like everyone could take the same class at that point. And yeah, there might be some lacking of like human element to it, right? It's a little bit less dynamic than if actual 30 kids were in a classroom with a teacher. However, I mean, think of it, you had like, you know, like the country's worst education system. That can just turn around completely if you just had the option to take a better classroom, a better teacher. And then using the virtual reality, I think can change the classroom completely. Like you're not just like stuck with just a whiteboard. Like you can do anything now. Like it's all completely coded within it. So it's like whatever you want to show them. I think that'd be such a better learning method than just kind of, you know, again, like the country's worst education system.
Picking at that point a little or piggybacking off that point,
mm-hmm.
the tool sets is what really fascinates me. Because for teachers, there's obviously a lot of software development that would go into it, but so long as software developers provide the tools and infrastructural support, pulling up 3D models, graphs, charts, conducting experiments, all that is cost effective, cheap, and quick with virtual reality. Right now, currently, like I want to say like 2018, people were doing virtual field trips in like high school.
Oh, wow.
You just use the Samsung Gear Go or whatever. It was like a 360 video thing. But that already, it made the whole class involved together, including the teacher, and you just put it on and launch the module. So
you're good to go.
That's completely different than reading about the history lessons in the books, right?
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, wow. Yeah, that honestly just gives me an idea of like, especially like history, like if you could just like be there in the action and tell a story with it. And like, it's all just coded within it, like an actual like experience. Like you'd learn so much more than someone just like speaking in front of class. Like even if they're the best storyteller, they're like, there's nothing that touches like an actual experience that you can see and maybe touch and like hear what's happening in that time period of what you're studying.
Let alone past time periods, current time periods. There's a really cool person, professor and researcher named Dr. Rita Hill, Walter Cronkite School. She does like, she has a full club of students, classes and clubs, where they're all using virtual reality for journalism. And so that I think is a awesome thing to see. And that targets exactly what we're trying to pick at here.
Wow. Do you know any of like the application, like what that actually means? Like, do you have any example?
So they did one where they were showing you what it's like to live inside one of one different type of jail cell, I think in Arizona or something like that. But like you're from the perspective of the inmate, hearing their experiences, walking through their daily life. And it's a mixture of 360 and 3D modeled environments. So it's a good way of fusing those two things together. And that was a really cool experience. I got to get a little peek at that. I think they've done a lot more stuff since then. I can't say I've checked up on that, but I know that they're continuing to do that.
No, I mean, just that alone is incredible. I mean, that, again, like where else are they going to get that experience? Like maybe you can make a field trip out there and like do all that. But like, again, this is something you can just launch and you're good to go. Like there's the experience right there. Man, yeah, super invaluable. I agree. Yeah, I think education definitely needs it. And I think there's a huge kind of portion of like parents usually that are avidly against it. And I think if we push past that and just like show what's possible, I think it could be huge. I think you could easily have that. Maybe not all of it. Maybe you obviously still need some kind of human element for that, you know, learning social skills and so forth. But I think using that as well, like I don't see why both can't be involved.
I agree. And another thing to that, I would say live concerts and entertainment, that's something that I feel like would greatly benefit, though it just hasn't necessarily been done right. And I've been scratching my head thinking about this. Maybe I need to Google it more, but I've been wondering, why is it that live concerts or like VR concerts are 360 videos still? And there's nothing wrong with 360 videos, but we have 3D sensors. There's Azure Kinect, there's Intel RealSense, our iPhones have them now. And so I'm wondering, like, what's holding us back from having like a full spatial concert, but virtual? Because I think there's ways you could synchronize the in-person and the virtual concert. I've seen videos, I'm sure you have as well, where the artist kind of does set practices before they do the concert itself. During that set practice, whatever actions they do, events that get invoked, you can have virtual correspondences to that. So say the artist says, when I'm at this part of the stage, the smoke fog machine shoots out fog and the lights turn on. That's the in-person. But now you can also synchronize VR events with that. If it's in a virtual reality environment, there's more money that you get because people can attend virtually as in addition to being in person. And so I think there's something interesting there. I haven't seen what's going on yet. And I'm curious why we haven't really pushed that forward yet.
Yeah. I mean, I doubt there's a lot of people even diving into anything near that. Again, weirdly, I feel like entertainment's the thing, like one of the last things to do. I think people
last things, but it's going to be a very powerful thing.
Oh, I think so too. I think that's huge. I mean, I see that very clearly in my mind. I don't know what that actually like experience is like and looks like and sounds like. I'm sure you'd have to have incredible sound quality because I'm sure that's like a lot of the reason people go to live concerts as well. But if you can conquer that and have an incredible visual experience, and again, it's the same like set you would hear live, like that'd be incredible. Mm-hmm. Wow. Now I want to focus a little bit on what you're doing now. So you're focusing on smell as the next sense to like conquer in VR. I'm so interested on this. First off, I guess why smell? It seems like such a curveball into VR. It's like, is that something, because we have obviously hearing, right? We have the sound of it, we have the visual, and they're working on touch, right? They're working on that kind of kinetic feedback. And then you're going for smell.
Yeah.
Why is that?
It was put upon me in the lab. It's not like I naturally came to the realization that we need smell, but I came to appreciate over time. So for the record, I'm not the only researcher in this space. And even within our lab, there's a set of other students, very talented students, Jessica Lai, another PhD, and Mason Mineta, an undergraduate. Mm-hmm. We worked together on the system and we really pushed it forward. Why I think smell is useful. So there's this really cool quote. There's a really cool quote by a guy named Dr. Ila Ofek, who does multisensory research at Microsoft. And he said, in a virtual world, there's no disabilities. And I think that interestingly with smell, it's an immediate cue. It's an immediate indicator of any type of event going on around you, so long as you get the sense of smell. There's this really talented researcher named Dr. Jazz Brooks. He's a PhD student, not a PhD candidate yet. But he took this kind of olfactory device. It, without getting into specifics, you wear it around here, and it would give you olfactory cues, is what he would call it. And it could be used by people who are blind, for example, where apparently you can kind of bilaterally, I think that's the right word, basically you can generate smells for different, the left or right nostril to give a sense of like something to your right or left. Now you can already do stuff with, some would say, why not wear an earpiece that just vibrates? Cause other people have done that.
Sure.
Where it becomes interesting with smell is, say you have in a smart home gas sensors or different types of devices that have an IoT communication. if a gas is registered on this little wearable device, it could give you an indication to look around and see a threat or something of attention. So that's one area where I think it's useful. Other areas, I think it's more crucial for medical practices. Mm. So people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, smell loss is a huge immediate indicator, or an early indicator rather, for those types of neurodegenerative diseases. You could use some sort of smell engine, which is what we call our work, to screen patients efficiently to see, is their sense of smell improving during treatments or degrading over treatments? Is it specific smells? Is it over the course of because they got COVID, or was it prior to that? With this type of screening instrument, you can do different types of treatments and see, are they becoming better or worse over time? It's an additional metric in addition to everything else you have, but it's a very powerful metric because it's the sense of smell. Now that there's so I talk about medical, I talk about accessibility. The next part to it, I would say, is the sense of smell. It's the way it's located in your brain. It's right near the center of your brain. And I can't remember what part of your brain it is here, but it processes or generates your emotions. Mm. It associates emotions with memories. Your sense of smell is a great way to take you back somewhere you forgot about decades ago, right? Mm-hmm. For me, for example, if I smelled a mixture of cigarettes and rain, interestingly, it takes me back to Germany because a lot of people smoke cigarettes and it rains there. But it's cool because I had family out there, so I just think about the areas I walked and like I'd smell it. Mm. But it's not like I commonly think about it. It's only when I get that sense of smell. And there's other people where the sense of smell takes them back to something very sentimental.
Instantly.
Yeah, instantly. So now if you can use that for VR, then you can root memories in VR, like VR-based memories, and then become way more powerful than they were just by touching things or hearing or seeing it.
Yeah.
You associate more modalities with it.
Oh, my God.
And so I think it's crucial to try to get that in there because it's once done right, it wouldn't necessarily be hard to make it look sleek. There's some really cool companies that have done some attempts at it. One of the recent ones is called OverEar Technology. It's awesome. It's like some sort of clamp that goes on the headset here. It generates a variety of different smells. You swap the cartridges in. It does different strengths. They get stronger as you get closer and weaker or fainter as you get further away. And so there's some people are working in that space.
That's amazing. I want to dive into that a little bit more. Like, I don't know like what in your lab's like proprietary research or not, but like you're talking about like cartridges as well for like the other company and or other research as well. Like, how do you, like, is there a resolution to smell? Like, how does that work? How do you generate a smell? Yeah, like, how do you do that?
That's a question I can't directly answer, not because of NDAs, but because we really don't know. We're starting to pick at that question with our research, and it was quite literally, how do you define resolution for smell?
Yeah.
So the problem is people perceive strengths of smells differently, and the reason for that is because of their upbringing. If I, being Persian, am exposed to specific spices that you are probably not, which means if that spice was in the room, I might pick it up right away because I'm sensitive to it, and you wouldn't. And so how do we define resolution there?
That
becomes a gray area. So this, it's not an easy answer to say you do this and that. It's very subjective, and we're trying to figure that out.
That makes sense. I mean, like for vision, like we have a literal score. Yeah, it's like 20/20 vision, whatever, or worse or worse or worse. Smell, there's nothing. I don't know any metric at all. In fact, like, I know I have a bad sense of smell. I don't know what that actually means. I don't even know what that means to the average person. Like, is that it? Maybe I'm actually good. I have no clue. Like, I just like people say they smell things and I just can't. And I just assume I have bad smell. That's so interesting.
And so a question we have with that also, a question with respect to that, that we came to with our research was, can we improve people's ability to smell specific things by exposing them to it through VR training? And so that's one thing that we're trying to work on as well.
Oh, that's so cool. So then eventually, I guess, would the goal be like pretty much instant artificial smell to any setting that they go through? For instance, if they just like port through a forest, like you would just instantly like smell forest setting. Mm-hmm. Oh, that'd be amazing.
Even if it's some primitive smell. So there is no RGB for smell yet.
Right.
At least that we're aware of. But that doesn't mean that you can't choose like, say 5 to 10 different base molecules of smell or olfactory molecules that make up a majority of our common smells every day.
Yeah.
You can mix and match them, so to say.
Oh, that's so cool.
There was a cool study where somebody took a fruity smell, I want to say like tangy smell, and they changed the 3D model. So it was a VR experiment. They generate the smell. It just like shoots it at your nose or something, but they changed the model you see. So you see a banana, you see a orange, you see an apple, you see berries, and they didn't tell the subject that it's the same smell, mm-hmm. but the subject claimed they smelled each thing differently. And so you can do some, what was once called a visual illusions, which then also became visual haptic illusions. Now it's visual olfactory illusions. So
wow.
You could substitute your smells, which can make it a lot easier to generate Whoa. A wider palette of smells.
Oh my God. That's insane. Yeah. That just takes again, this virtual reality experience to an entirely different level. Yeah. I'm with you.
Now here's another cool one. When you say VR, there's also AR. So mm-hmm. there's this researcher, this lab called the Sky Lab, I think. I'm sorry if I butcher it, but it's led mm-hmm. by Dr. Mariana Obriss. Wonderful researcher, just awesome work, her and her students. They did one where they made a olfactory display in a car. Mm-hmm. It was like a simulated car, and they would see if they use different olfactory cues, how it altered driver behavior. Oh. So they compared it with like a visual HUD display to see if they can reduce like angry driving or whatever is the term there. What they would do is they would shoot a different smell. Say like you're about to come up on a red stop sign. Mm-hmm. They'd shoot a smell, unbeknownst to the user really what the smell is, but they would find a database of smells that give different emotions. And it would improve the user's ability to drive over visual notifications. Visual right. notifications aggravates the driver. Mm-hmm. Olfactory is just naturally a part of your environment. You don't even notice it, but the smell changes your mood because it hits that emotion part.
Wow.
And so that was augmented reality. Mercedes loved that. And I think that they're trying to work with Mercedes now. But you can imagine probably within the next few years, cars will have ways of adjusting their smell.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. That makes sense too, though. I mean, what they're deeming like a red light being a negative thing, like a negative possible catalyst, and so they'll inject maybe like, I don't know, some sweetness in the air, and you're yep. like, okay, maybe it's not so bad.
Now take the driving part out of it. At MIT Media Lab, led by Dr. Patty Mays, there was mm-hmm. a wonderful student named Dr. Judith Morris, and she co-authored this work with someone else, I can't remember who, but they did this thing called on-face wearable olfactory displays, where they made like a small little olfactory display is what we call basically a way of shooting out artificial smells, yeah. Whether it be a single scent or a combination. So she made one where you could put on your glasses, you could wear it as a necklace, it could be a nose ring or whatever. Really cool form factors. I think that their study though with the necklace one, where they would measure your, I think you wore some sort of wristband or something that could mm. kind of measure anxiety okay. and increase blood pressure sure. or something like that. And it would shoot out smells to alter your mood. And so just like that, it could detect when you're stressed, when you're anxious, wow. it would diffuse this smell just a little bit and it changes your mood. And so they did like a week long study with people, see how that influences their daily lifestyle. People reported improvements, but a more long-term study would be useful.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's amazing. I can only imagine. I mean, mm-hmm. there's something about it. Yeah, I don't know what it is either. Something maybe primal instinct to us where it's like you smell something nice and you're just instantly in a better mood. Like, I don't know what it is. It's like very therapeutic almost. You're just like, oh, okay, maybe it's not so bad.
For some people, the smell of weed pisses them off and others, it makes them happy. I think that's exactly. a great example of it, yeah.
Yeah, it brings you back to like a festival or something. You're like, okay, this is great. Some people, they're like, this is terrible. Yeah. I don't want my kids near this smell. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, like working with smells, does this kind of impact your day-to-day at all? Do you like, I guess, interact with smells? Yeah, like in differently at all after this?
I'm more aware of it. Mm-hmm. I used to joke that I have these kind of boring party tricks where I could tell you why your sense of smell is good or bad. Mm-hmm. So it definitely helped me better understand how I'm perceiving my daily life. Right. I can't say I've become more aware of smells necessarily, but I am more understanding of what's going on when I'm smelling something.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Do you deem it now? Kind of, do you categorize it now that you kind of worked with smells? You're like, oh, that's a little bit more, I don't know, bitter, or this is a little bit more sweet. Are you able to like kind of simulate the smell in your mind, like compartmentalize it in a sense? Is that possible?
I don't know if it's possible. I can't say yes or no to that. I can answer the question to say that I haven't come to that type of conclusion mm-hmm. or realization with smell yet, but that's an interesting question.
Yeah, because this is all completely unfounded, but like I do wonder if it's like, you know, the smell of like mahogany or something some wood or something. Like I do wonder if it's like, okay, we just take a little bit of this category of smell in this category and then boom, like mash it together in the wood. Like
there are
I wonder that
researchers that do I think experience that type of sensation. Mm-hmm. They're more focused with olfactory, just like olfaction itself, and so there are people I'm sure that are capable, kind of have some sort of acuity to that.
Yeah,
I'm not one of them though.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, so like so you're working on smell. Is taste as well something that is being worked on?
It is being worked on. I can't speak too much on that. Okay. I know that there are some handful of researchers. The thing is with that, there's I think it's like two ways you can achieve it. One is electrical stimulation on the tongue, and then the other is through olfaction. So your sense of smell is associated with it. Actually, I might have butchered that, but I know one is for sure electrical stimulation.
Sure.
So because of that, that limits the amount of work you could do with it naturally.
Yeah.
Because the problem is people do not like invasive technologies. And there was a really cool researcher. I can't remember his name, but he's done some wonderful works, one of which is called Seasoned Traveler. He, during a workshop, was talking about how when you do these multi-sensory technologies, something they realized early on is when they had these kind of bulky setups or weird peripheral devices, people were turned off by it. Whether they admitted it or not, they acted differently with it. So what they started doing is modeling their technology to reflect everyday devices or utensils, one of which was chopsticks. So they made chopsticks that on the tip of it, it actually does the electrical stimulation to change the taste.
Yeah.
But because it's like a chopstick, you don't notice. And so when you eat your food, it changes the taste of the food. And so that was a really cool work. But the problem is that it's only short term. So you hit the shock, it sends an electrical signal through your tongue to your brain. But once you finish eating the food, you get the aftertaste, which kind of fucks with it.
Yeah.
But still, that was a really interesting thing to learn.
Yeah, that may.
So there is work there, though. There is work there.
Yeah. Well, I like they're kind of going in that. And I do like, in general, that research does do that. They take in account the human aspect of it. It's like, we could just make this and make it, like, again, bulky and it would work and so forth. But, like, that they wouldn't use that. Like, that just doesn't make sense.
There's still some research that's bulky. Our research is bulky. But, yeah, generally, it's nice to see that.
And that's how it starts. But then, you move into this more elegant solution. And you're like, oh, now people, mass adoption. That's where it is. Like, again, VR, again, going back to the fundamental, like, thing of it is that, like, it's a bulky technology. It just kind of is a little bit clunky right now. But as soon as we have those elegant solutions, it's like, oh, why not? Like, it's so easy to do now and so perfectly, like, perfect resolution and perfect sound, perfect everything. It's like, oh, easy. It's such an easy choice to get in after that. And then all the software applications on top of that, it's like, why would you not? Like, look at the universe waiting for you inside here. Yeah, I think that's the way to go.
It's going to become more common, I think, once Apple announces their headset.
Mm.
Rumor is it's AR, it's mixed reality. I don't even know anymore, but supposedly it's next year. Mm. And so when that comes out, I think it's really going to drive consumer adoption to be more aware. Surprisingly, a lot of people, not to switch topics, say Snap has done a great job at introducing people to mixed reality.
Yeah.
Because those face filters, that's all augmented reality. Yeah. People don't even realize that's augmented reality.
No, and they do it amazingly. Mm-hmm. Like, for just like an application on your phone, like, it's pretty incredible what it does. Right. I mean, I've seen them, like, turn yourself into a different person or older or have, like, long hair all of a sudden, and it's, like, perfect. Like, you would have no idea. If you showed it to a stranger, you'd be like, yep, that's a person, like, for sure. Like, no way that's, like, messed with. Yeah, you'd have no idea. Like, it's incredible. And so, using that and then, again, kind of combining it with modern day hardware to VR, like, we're so close. It feels like we're on a precipice of something perfect.
Perfection, I don't know if we'll ever achieve that, but we're definitely on the cusp of a paradigm shift, kind of how the iPhone was. I think that people are starting to become aware to that, whether they have a headset device or not. Surprisingly, it's a controversial topic for researchers and developers, the metaverse. I think the fact that that's a topic of discussion has made everybody aware of this digital realm of life. And so people are hopefully more open to it now than they were before.
I think so. I think, it's kind of just like cracking through just a little bit. I do want to talk about metaverse, actually. I do have some questions on that. But first, I want to say, like, because we're focusing on smell and we're focusing on taste, like, we're focusing on everything, right? Obviously, it's just like all your senses, if they are convinced, that would be a reality at that point. No, like, basically, here's what my question was. If I were to have a steak dinner in VR, it smelled like it, it tasted like it perfectly, I see it, everything sounds like, there's nothing convincing me otherwise that this is a steak dinner, and I eat it in VR, am I full after? Like, would I, like, simulate a full meal?
In this situation, are you actually eating something?
No. Let's say it's, like, electro. Like,
I don't know how well you can trick your brain into being filled, but you can give the sensation that you're eating. Mm. What's possible right now, say you instead had a plate of tofu, but with a VR headset, you see a steak. It smells like a steak.
Yeah.
It sounds like it. You have the sizzle. The tactile sensations of it, let's just say they're both kind of squishy.
Sure.
You can trick the person instantly into thinking they're eating steak. And there's studies that do that.
That's amazing.
There was a really cool one called VR Cocktail by one of the researchers I was just talking about. that says let's model them after everyday life items. It has LEDs on the tip of the wine glass. It has a little smell module there, like on the corner of it where it sprays. And when you drink it, it's just water in the case of the study, but they would make you feel like you're drinking purple Kool-Aid or whatever you want just by tricking you by the smell.
And it was, I'm sure it was perfectly convincing too. I'm sure it was.
Perfectly convincing.
That's insane. Oh my God. It's already a thing.
Yeah. That was that's crazy. Study. That was like 5 years ago.
That's amazing to me. Does any of this scare you? Like, do you see any repercussions of this when it gets, again, mass adoption? I feel like in a research lab, we're, you're all on the same page there. It's like, of course, we're just trying to further science and so forth. But for mass adoption, do you see any, like, bad things happening because of this on how convincing it is? I mean, if that was 5 years ago, and then we just give this to millions of people, this kind of technology, let's say it was just perfectly commercial, like, you could just buy this and everyone could do it. Does that scare you at all?
Well, I certainly don't turn tongue-in-cheek to that question or the reality of it. I do think there's a lot of negatives with virtual reality, mixed reality devices. A good indicator of it, a good example of that is porn. So people who unfortunately are quick to resort to porn, with VR, it's much more immersive. It's much more realistic. And you're less inclined to try to change your daily habits or social lifestyle to go meet somebody, perhaps.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that is the case, but it could be the case. And
right.
These are unfortunate, the unfortunate reality of this technology. I think it's already there with smartphones and tablets, but it's going to be exacerbated by VR. I'm not sure what the solution is there. I don't even know if there is a solution, really. It's just kind of a matter of, like, my motivation for it is for human good. I am aware that some of the stuff I work on could potentially be used for harm, but at least it's not hurting anybody physically, at least.
That is nice. That is nice to know. And I agree with you. I'm not sure there is a solution yet because, and like, the comparison I have is like cell phones, like smartphones to, again, like social skills. Like, again, I've always said this, like, we want to run further, right? So we made shoes so that you could run further, right? You made a tool to make something easier, like a task easier. That's just what we do as humans. The problem with that is that your feet atrophy. Like, you have weaker feet because of that. You have this tool to depend on, and so your skill becomes weaker inherently. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's just how we are built.
Right.
Now, when it comes to, like, smartphones and, like, you know, social media and getting in touch with people as quick and as easy as possible, like, what happens now because you made your social skills so accessible, so easy, it atrophies as a skill because now you don't have to, like, call a landline. You don't have to be polite on the phone and be like, hey, is Mary there? And then, like, you don't have to, like, go through all that bullshit we went through growing up on, like, all the communication settings. Now it's just, like, quick. And then what happens now? It's like, now it's so easy to ghost someone or not, you know, show up to something or whatever. Like, again, social skills atrophy now over time because of smartphones, like, 100%. And so that's, and then, and again, like, what's the solution to that? Well, it's like, well, just don't be on your smartphone. Like, the solution is just to not use the technology. So it does scare me in that regard where it's like, I mean, we already have, like, an analogy here and it's, like, not going too well. And then again, doing, like, something so convincing as, like, very convincing VR, like, again, it's just kind of like another level. It's like, what do we do about that? And I would hate the solution just to be like, well, just don't use VR that much, because it's like, that's not going to happen. Like,
I'd like to think there are researchers that are looking in that space. Mm-hmm. I unfortunately have not read any work there, so I don't know. But I'd be dumbfounded if nobody's thinking about how to mitigate those types of issues.
Yeah.
But I don't think there'd be a foolproof solution.
Yeah, I don't think so either. What scares me is that, like, you know, again, it's like apps on your phone, like, they used to be very innocent. I don't even want to say that word. But, like, yeah, simplistic, let's say. Mm-hmm. But then, like, you know, people that focus on, like, gambling addictions and so forth, like, those marketing teams and so forth got a hold of this market of apps and try to keep you on that app as long as possible. And that was really scary. VR, I don't think, does that yet. They're not focusing on how do you stay in VR as long as possible. But guarantee there's going to be teams out there that are doing that, especially when money is involved, like, companies get involved in VR heavily. That's, of course, going to happen, right? It's like, okay, we get more money if they stay in our VR space, whatever that is, or application or whatever it is, as long as possible. How do we do that? And then it's like, do we really want people? Like, I mean, people are on their phones 8 hours a day watching TikTok right now. Like, do we want that in a VR setting? That's what kind of scares me. Again, I think as long as you're just a competent person, it won't be an issue. But it is scary because it's like, that's already happening right now and it's not even that great of, like, an experience.
simply put, I think there's a lot of issues with tech, ethical issues with tech, not just VR. Yeah.
And that's fair. Yeah. Again, it's kind of like fire as a tech, right? You could use it to cook your food or you can burn your neighbor's house down. That's like, yeah, you know, you got to use it how you want. Like, yeah. That's just what it is. Now, I want to talk because like I'm so curious on like working in a lab. Like that is so amazing to me. What is it like to like work on a cutting edge technology? Because that's kind of what you're doing. Like, I don't know how many people are working on, especially like smell, but also just 3D data streaming. Like, what is it like to work on that cutting edge? Is it like the movies? Is it like very exciting? Or is it just like more boring research?
Right. So for one, I appreciate the compliment. Our lab is very unique in that we are high throughput, meaning we produce a lot of work, whether it gets published or not. We're firing on all cylinders at all times. And my colleagues are very devoted to what they do. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting to be in a lab. I think it's, fortunately, we have a really good advisor, Robert, and we get to do a lot of, we have a lot of toys to play with. And so what's cool about being in the research lab in that regard is that if I want to mess around with brain computer interfaces one night, I can grab that device and start to play around with the SDK. If I want to work on haptics with the Haptex gloves, we have access to that. And so in ways you can say I'm spoiled because I have access to a lot of these things that many research labs don't even have access to. So I'm grateful in that regard because it's a unique experience. Now, the question is, well, what's it like? You know, at times you could say I take it for granted. I'm not as productive as I'd like to be some weeks, but apparently that's a universal theme with researchers. You get burnt out. Hell, that's not even researchers. That's artists. That's engineers. Everyone. Anyone.
Yeah.
But there is something exciting when you are doing disciplined research and you realize that this methodology of research has been around for centuries, and it started with very few academics, and it's scaled up, and it's something people take serious. I had the good fortune of participating in something called a TPC meeting, a technical program committee review, where they review a bunch of papers of all these experts in different fields. And the means to which they evaluate the paper, they ask questions like, well, is this methodology reproducible for how they evaluate it? Is it simulated tests? Is it physical tests? What's the novelty here? Do they actually cite related works? What's the practicality of it? What are the broader implications? It's great to have these types of questions and to know your work gets criticized in this way because it makes you really care about what you're doing. There's pros and cons to being a researcher. It's excruciating work, especially if you are a professor. You have to write grants and proposals. You don't have that much money. Your salary's low. You're trying to get tenure. Like it's a stressful situation. You got to manage students. Then from the student's perspective, you work on research and you think it's the next big thing and it might not be. And you just put all these years into it. And so those could be some painful parts of it. But I think I probably because I'm a hardcore Star Wars geek, I find it very similar to being a Jedi in a way, because you're going through an apprenticeship with your Jedi master. Mm-hmm. You're trying to learn the good versus the bad, and you're believing in a higher level order of knowledge. Mm. And that's what research feels like.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that. I'd say I'm sure every kid and maybe adult like has fantasized of like working in a lab and having just an insane eureka moment or some breakthrough and like, it's, and then you change the world with it. Like, I don't know. There's something so appealing about that. And I love that. But I'm with you. I'm sure it's kind of filled also with like the monotony of like grant write-ups and so forth. And it's just all that. You kind of have to meet both.
Some of your research might get so criticized by other experts because they don't believe in the idea that it gets denied or shit on for a decade only to win a Nobel Peace Prize 2 decades later. So it's a very tough area as well. People are very ego-filled in academia. That's for sure.
And what's it like in the VR space specifically? I feel like people have very strong opinions about it. Like, do you see that in academia where it's like you'd get, you know, a grant rejected or something and it's like, guys, like.
I see it more interestingly in, granted, I haven't been necessarily exposed to a lot of environments with like grant writing, but I saw it more in my time interning at NASA than I did in a research lab where people thought VR as a gimmick. But in terms of like work itself, there's definitely researchers that would very hardcore believe a certain way and close off any suggestions or ideas elsewhere suggesting another approach.
Right.
I have seen bits and pieces of it. I know it's just part of the game, but it's way, way more common in other industries, surprisingly, not tech, but biology and other disciplines like that.
Oh, interesting.
Or astronomy. I went to an astronomy conference. It's weird because it was like a mixture of planetary science and chemistry. Basically, I went to a planetary science conference. Okay. And in there, when people gave talks and they believed, based on the data collected, they came to these conclusions. Researchers would get up and just shit on it and say their advisor's wrong, they're wrong, and they need to reconsider their work in front of everybody. And so I don't have that severity in the conferences I've gone to. So it could be worse.
That's crazy. Why do you think that is? It's just kind of like a traditionalized sector?
I don't know what the reasoning is, but I can tell you it's been around for centuries.
Yeah.
I've read books, some really great books on human knowledge. One was a short brief history of nearly of everything, something like that, but it's by Bill Bryson, and it's about how the Earth came to be. Starts with the Big Bang, ends all the way with like World War II or something like that.
Wow.
It's been a while since I read the book, but in it, he goes through centuries of research, and in it, you see how much people were shit on. A good example, what was it? I'm drawing a blank. The man who discovered how our genes, we inherit genes from our parents. What was the name of the fellow?
I don't know that one off the top of my head.
I can't believe I'm forgetting it. Darwin, I think Darwin or something like that.
Was it?
I think it was. But regardless, his ideas were neglected for a very long time until they were parts of it were seen to be true. And so at the time, researchers completely destroyed any claims he had. Another similar researcher went through controversial pushback was the man who invented calculus. I'm drawing a blank, but... he also made some discoveries in terms of how light works. Who was it that did that? I can't believe I'm drawing a blank on it. But basically the famous prism experiment, the color prism experiment, that the person who came up with those conclusions, not a lot of people believe them right away. And so this is very common. And I can't tell you what the cause is, but I could say it used to be far more common. I'd like to think it's less common than it used to be because people are naturally more open-minded with the information age. But it'll probably still continue for a while.
Yeah, that's insane to me too. It does seem like when someone comes out with some groundbreaking, you know, info that they have and can prove it, and everyone's like, no, like, I think it's just like gut bias almost. It's like, it's been this way for 250 years. Like, you're telling me it's different now? Like, probably not. Yeah, I think it's that. And then it turns out they're right. I know Einstein had a tremendous amount of trouble as well. Yeah, and then again, it's only after his death where it's like, now it's starting to prove right. Newton, same thing, like same kind of deal. Yeah, it's crazy how that works, but I guess that's what it is. I think it is just kind of like an institutionalized thing. It's like, it's this way, and yes, we're in a, you know, a place that we should be advancing, but it's like everyone is so skeptical all the time that it's like, well, we don't want to change these fundamental laws that we deem as fundamental. I think that's what it comes down to. Luckily, though, I think in this VR space, it's like in it itself is like very progressive. So it's like, you definitely know, if you're like in the audience of that, it's like you kind of have to keep an open mind anyway.
Yep.
That is nice. Okay. Now, I think, so we talked about all that. I wanted to get back to the metaverse stuff. Sure. I just want your opinion on it, simply enough. Like, do you deem like one company behind a universe, a metaverse, like, is that a good thing? Or would you prefer it more like when the internet came out and it's more like the Wild West approach, where it's like anyone can do whatever they want, and then you're just kind of like surfing all these kind of domains?
I think that it's not necessarily a good or bad thing if one entity owns a portion of it, I guess you could say. But I don't think it'll be possible for one single company to own it, because the programmers, hackers, creators, what might you, they wouldn't put up for that. I mean, we saw that with the internet itself, the advent of the internet. It was a lot of different kind of programmers all around the world that really brought it to fruition and contributed to it. And their goal was to make sure it was not centralized to a specific owner or whatever might you. Mm. And I think the same thing would happen with the metaverse. I do think that it makes sense that some companies have a central metaverse that people could enter. And I think Facebook's actually a good example of it, whether people agree with it or not. In terms of the social media that they provide and potentially the future services are going to offer, I think it would be great to have some sort of avatar that could jump between all the different mini types of apps that are in the Meta ecosystem. And I have no gripes with that. I understand there's privacy issues and implications, and that's a whole discussion in and of itself. But I do not think that Metaverse will be owned or confined to a single entity. I think it's going to be... What's weird is when people speak of the Metaverse, they talk about... It seems that there's a disconnect, whether it be my understanding or someone else's, that the metaverse is a separate entity to the internet. I actually think they're one in the same, and the internet will become the metaverse.
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. And do you think that's kind of where, I guess, Web3 dives into deeply, where it's like, again, a little bit more, I want to say community-based, but maybe that's not the right word, but that it's like not these big giants of whatever, you know, kind of controlling these platforms. It's going to be a lot more separate communities in a sense. But again, like the advent of the internet, like that exact kind of thing, but better because it's, you know, a lot more interesting, a lot more complex. I see. Now with that, like you said, people in your field, like in this VR research space, has like very strong opinions against Metaverse. What do they say about it?
One, they don't like the idea of a central source, so they wouldn't be happy with what necessarily Facebook owning. And I'm not saying I think that that should happen either, but it just seems like that's where we're heading. And so my realization of it is that. But some people don't believe in a metaverse. Some people hate the term metaverse as a separate entity because they also think it's just the internet. Another thing that frustrates them is that this has become a kind of buzz term for every company to have their own metaverse. NVIDIA has a metaverse. They call it the Omniverse. Meta has their, they literally changed their name from Facebook to Meta. Apple hasn't really pushed any plans there. I don't know what they're going to do. And then there's more smaller scale companies and crypto funded ideas that are a meta. So there's like the virtual real estate, which is technically a metaverse as well. And there's a bit too much going on there and it seems too soon. And I think that frustrates people because it gets away from the more important work that's happening. Not to say any of that work isn't important, but it can be kind of distracting from the bigger goal that researchers have had for a while of like, what is a virtual world look like? What does it mean to share experiences in a virtual landscape? But it's not like it's a bad thing either because a lot of people are now discussing it. And so it's a great thing to see, but it's weird because there was like, there used to be a big controversy of, do we call virtual reality, augmented reality XR? Do we call it MR? What do we call it? And now there's metaverse, which just people are saying, well, what is metaverse? Where is metaverse? And that leads to a whole can of worms there too.
Very true. The one thing I do like about, you know, Facebook Meta being behind that is that, like, I mean, they have a ton of money, which is kind of nice. You can throw that into research. Yes, I can understand like that could be used for nefarious reasons as well, right? To like, again, kind of like that gambling marketing that we're talking about. How do we keep them in as long as possible? Because that's what Facebook does anyway for their app and so forth. So it's like, yes, I understand that. But I do like that they can throw billions of dollars into research if they want to. Sure. And that's a super necessary thing if you want to keep pushing forward. It's like, we need something to back that. Like, we can't focus on just academia funding. Like, they can only get us so far, I feel like. But when you have a private company that's just going to like take the reins and go for it, it could be massive. And look what they've done so far. I mean, it's already pretty incredible. Now, with that, like the whole metaverse thing as well. So like, I guess, man, it's so hard to talk about. So like, I guess first off, should people be up to date on this information coming out? Like, do you think this should be like mass news coming out of like staying up to date what's going on with metaverse, with virtual reality? Is this something that we should all be aware of all the time? Or should we just, because I feel like right now it's just on the back burner. Sometimes big stories come up, but like it's not really happening for everyone. You know, no one's searching up like what the new technologies are coming out and so forth. Do you think it should stay that way? Or do you think there should be a lot more eyes on this right now?
I don't think there needs to be more eyes, but I do think people should be aware generally of where the tech is going.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to how many people thought the internet would be a gimmick and that computers would not be part of your daily life. Yeah. And it completely transformed it. And actually, it hurt a lot of people's careers because they weren't ready for that. So I think you don't need to be a programmer to understand what's going on with the metaverse. There's so many excellent Medium blog posts, talks, et cetera, that you could watch, read. So I think people should look into it more. Do I think it's necessary and something that's going to be a paradigm shift immediately? No, but eventually it will be. Mm-hmm. If there's something that I think people should be aware of immediately, it's augmented reality. I think that people should read into augmented reality and understand what's the advancements that are happening, ongoing, what's the current state of the art, and what's the practicality of this technology. One, because it's going to be a natural interface we use. But two, it can lead to some exciting ideas because this is just such a nascent technology. We still don't even have all the devices to interface with augmented reality yet,
right.
But we're getting there. And so I feel like the timing is good right now to start entering the space.
Yeah, I'm with you. And with that, like, so do you think, because again, going back to metaverse stuff as well, like VR, do you think it's going to be more like Ready Player One, where it's like a little, it's kind of more about escapism, seeing other things, Or do you think it's going to be, again, where I deem as AR is more just enhancing what we already have in this reality?
Like, where do you? A bit of both. Yeah. I like that. It's certainly going to advance many things that you do already. Have you ever seen the movie Her?
Yeah.
With Joaquin Phoenix. Right. Mm-hmm. There's a really wonderful scene where he's walking on a date with his AI and she's on the glasses and they're talking about what they're seeing together, making jokes. I thought that was a flawless execution of like what it means to advance your daily lifestyle. Like, yes, I don't mean it that you need an AI to interface with, but it could be somebody else watching your perspective, but then you can have that natural dialogue as if they're there in person. So that's one part of it that I think is wonderfully executed and something that will be a part of our life. Now, the other point you said was, would it be like Ready Player One where it's escapism? I think it will naturally be like that'll be a fraction of it. I don't think that'll entirely be the motivating usage of VR. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we'll actually ever enter a Ready Player One, at least in our lifetime. I do think eventually we will, because the way technology is advancing, researchers are researching. It seems like we're heading in that space. But it's not going to necessarily just be an escapism thing. There's some really good work in VR and people who believe that VR should only be a fraction of your daily life, if even, because there's clear use cases where it benefits VR. And then there's others where you still need your smartphone. And one thing that I frequently see is people saying it's going to kill the smartphone and that you're no longer going to use that.
I've heard that.
And perhaps in some ways it will, but I don't think you'll ever get rid of the smartphone because it's essentially morphed into a piece of glass that is your portal to another reality. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's an excellent interface that you'll frequently use. And so there are times where you'll just use a tablet or an iPhone. There are times where you might just have your smartwatch. There might be times where you only have AirPods and nothing else. Yeah. And I actually look forward more to that than I do the other elements. But then I think there'll be a time where you should put VR on and it would be very useful for escapism things, but it could also be used for intensive programming. I imagine you have multiple monitors up. You're stepping into the stack of your code as a programmer. And I think being a programmer itself is going to change in many ways with virtual reality as well, in terms of how you write code and how you visualize code.
Yeah, I actually have a question about that too, specifically for coding in VR. I know nothing about coding. I want to put that right now. So this question might be really stupid, but for VR, so like you're talking about workplace VR settings, and I think again that's going to be massive. Would it be possible for perhaps to put on a VR headset, not have a computer, and code using whatever cloud services, that kind of thing, and like in virtual reality, you're seeing a computer or something, like you're seeing whatever you need to code, or maybe not even a computer, maybe it's like a much more immersive experience than that. But that's like the workday in a sense, is you kind of go in and you're like in this reality of nothing out, is just a headset or whatever you need, and then that is it. Like, do you think that's possible?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there's some early work from Unity Labs. There's some really talented researchers there. I can't remember all of them, so forgive me, but it's Eric Provencher, Dylan Urquidy, and then Greg Madison. And Greg Madison was the one that posted on Twitter this kind of new envisioned workflow of using a game engine and designing a virtual world where it's all in VR, barely use it. It could either benefit from the use of a computer keyboard or something, but it could all be done entirely in VR as well. And it changes your tool set, because now it's not that you just have the keyboard, but you have like little widgets and gadgets around you that are virtual, but you could use that to change your environment, your scene. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll probably be within the next 5 years, you'll start to see some prototypes or beta releases of like these new programming tools. So it's very much possible.
Yeah, no, I can see that very clearly. Plus, I mean, one, I think it'd make it more fun as well, right? Like, I don't know how fun coding can be. I'm sure it has its, you know, pros and cons. But like, yeah, I can imagine a much more immersive space. I mean, even showing us like coding in real time in virtual reality, like someone has the headset on and then you can just be like, drop an apple right here. And then it just does it. And in real time, like, that's amazing. I can only imagine, you know, again, kind of analogous to coding, like in a workplace setting, if it's like that immersive, that interesting, that seamless, like it could only make the workday so much more interesting and much more motivating than, again, sitting behind a screen and like watching just a screen of code.
Absolutely. There was early attempts from IBM Watson. They presented at Unity Unite 2018, and I was fortunate to be in attendance. They used their IBM Watson to interface with some sort of 3D model repository where you can say, as you just suggested, give me an apple, and it'll pop it up for you, and then you can move it where you want in the virtual setting. And so That was 2018.
Yeah.
Right? So granted, the demo was probably curated to work, or at least it wasn't as flexible as one might think. But since then, I'm sure they've advanced it or others have done similar things.
Yeah. I mean, just not even 2 or 3 weeks ago, I don't know if you saw, but MKBHD did a video on this, on like an AI that you uses text language and you can just say what you want in a picture and it'll
Dolly,
that's it. Yeah. Same kind of thing though, where it's just like, yeah, you're just typing out what you want to see and then it will put up a pretty convincing image. Like, it'll, and first of all, it's brand new, that the image has never been like existed before. But second, it's like very accurate most of the time on like what you're putting in. Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter how abstract it is. I mean, that's amazing. If you could do that again for like a coding kind of workspace, and it's again, like maybe not even just like, cause I think everyone has the vision of a coder and they're just typing away all day and they probably don't have to speak like at all if they really don't want to. But if you can make it a more immersive experience where it is kind of like a feedback to your, to the workspace, that'd be such a more interesting workplace dynamic.
It's a fascinating thought. It's a good thought experiment as to what that, that would look like in the future of programming.
And that's probably far from now, if ever, but pretty cool. I don't know. That'd be really interesting. Do you know anything about VR that maybe the public doesn't know?
There is a really interesting technology I recently learned of called chemical haptics. It comes out of Dr. Pedro Lopes's human computer augmentation lab. I believe that's what the lab's called. Okay. I butcher it often, but talented group of researchers. And one of them named one of the PhD students, Jasmine Liu, led this work where you wear this kind of sleeve. It's like a silicone sleeve. Mm-hmm. And there's a little reservoir of water or a liquid and a pump, like a micro pump, and it shoots it around your hand and it recycles it back to the pump. One side of it's just like a closed tube, and then the other side's open on your skin.
Okay.
So some of the liquid gets absorbed by your skin and then it gets recycled back. Okay. Let's say there's like a 10% depletion rate or something. So you shoot one, you lose 10%, it gets recycled, you shoot it, same thing.
Okay.
This different chemicals that get absorbed by your skin give different sensations, such as tingling, fire, hot, cold, shock, whatever might you. And you can put these pouches almost anywhere that your skin's sensitive. They put some right here. They put some here. I think they also test it on your ankle.
Wow.
And you can generate like 20 different types of experiences with just 5 chemicals. And so this is quite literally chemical haptics. And I found that very fascinating because it looked like it was just such a minimal requirement in terms of like cost and setup to get that on a headset. Yeah. And the fact that you can just kind of repump these liquid reservoirs to have different sensations for games, you can have some really wild experiences there. I mean, right now we're just talking entertainment and gaming. I'm sure there's more there's broader implications of this work, but just that alone, they showed like 4 different games and you could create all these different experiences with it. I thought that was so fascinating. And that was
really
cool new research that you're not seeing every day.
No. That's incredible. I mean, 20 senses too, at least, right?
20
20 experiences, gotcha. Yeah. And I'm guessing those are kind of like demoed experiences in the fact that like it's like controlled, is that right? Like you're not just like walking around in VR space and then like it just happens.
Yeah, so it's synchronized with like game events. You might have some sort of collider in the virtual world where once you enter proximity, invoke this sensation.
That's amazing. Do you ever think that like, I don't know, maybe a company like Disney would come out with like a VR experience when like kind of haptics and smell and everything, like all these senses come into fruition more seamlessly into VR? Do you think companies would do that? And then it's like, hey, like here's $50 and now you can experience Disneyland or something like, or even maybe something probably even way better. And you can fully experience it like this. And it's just kind of like a paywall experience. Do you think that is like a thing businesses could do?
I think companies are already trying to do that. I also think Disney itself is trying to do that.
I can imagine. That.
But I do believe a lot of companies are going to try to have their own unique theme park.
Yeah.
Whereas, like there will be competitors in that space beyond just the theme parks themselves, like Universal Studios or Disney. There is a really cool technology called the Tesla suit, not associated with Tesla or Elon Musk, but like a different company. And they provide this kind of wearable suit you put on, like a vest.
Yeah.
And it has a bunch of different electrodes placed around so it can shock different parts of your body and give you tactile sensations. And their demo lets you feel raindrops. It lets you feel bullets hitting you. It lets you feel a boxing match. You could do some really cool experiences there. So there's attempts. It's very expensive. And it's not in any way a commodity consumer-facing device or a commercial device that users are commonly buying.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when it will get to that point, but I do know it's inevitable.
Yeah, that's insane. Yep. My goodness. Have you thought of anything like that? Like kind of like a VR business or a VR kind of thing, like experience that you could maybe immortalize?
Yeah, I mean, I float ideas around. It's probably something I keep private for now. That's not fair. On the podcast, but it is something I have entertained the thought of. Yeah. I am really interested in what multi-sensory technologies look like. One thought I have had, which I am comfortable sharing, I am a sucker for experiencing an album all the way through. Like yeah. I only recently started doing it, but when an artist puts out a work that they clearly put care into making it, like from start to finish, you listen to it and you get a range of emotions.
Yeah.
I enjoy just kind of sitting down, zoning out, listening to the music. And I thought, what would a future where artists have more elements of their music beyond just sound look mm-hmm. like? Like, could an album be a immersive experience?
Yeah.
And one attempt I saw, and I'm sure these artists have done many attempts. I know Childish Gambino did something of a mixed reality album, mm-hmm. And Bjork has done it similar. Wow. But there was ASAP Rocky when he released Testing, the album, 2019, mm-hmm. I think it was, or so, or 2018. Mm-hmm. When he first unveiled the album, like a listening party, he had this kind of exhibit where he was in a coma and he woke up through the music, and throughout like his actions, he would put the album together in real time in front of people.
Wow.
And you see some artists do this. Grimes has some virtual sets, yep. where, or videos where she's generating one. The music in real time.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh, this is really cool. Like, how do you take that creative element like and push it even further, mm-hmm. Where the users can experience like what the artist is thinking creatively and emotions they're feeling? And so I thought multi-sensory technologies could be a way to do that. But then how do you equip artists with the tools where they can kind of construct this virtualized album experience, that it's not just sound, but there's visuals and tactile sensations, maybe, and smells associated with it.
Yeah.
So it's very far-fetched. I don't know what that looks like or where it goes, but it is a thought that I love to keep coming back to just kind of experiment with.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, you saying that makes a lot more sense to me. I mean, that is a completely leveled up experience from just like listening to an album.
And I think artists would like that. I think musicians would really, if you can do it right, it gives them something, because I believe their goal is to make you invoke sensations in you, feelings, thoughts, right? And so it just would be so awesome if you can continue to add to that. One of my favorite role models, so to say, is Rick Rubin. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he has this awesome studio called Shangri-La, where I believe the artists don't have access to their phones. There's no clocks. And many artists have performed there. Johnny Cash, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Tyler Creator, Mac Miller.
Wow.
The list goes on and on. Mm. Lady Gaga, I believe, Adele. Like, all these musicians have come here to do great music. And it's kind of this environment, the setting he builds and the tools he equips the artists with, mental constructs, so to say.
Yeah.
And so I think that it'd be cool to do something like that, but digitize tool sets and provide that to them so they can really explore themselves as artists, but also share that experience with other people who want that.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, because I'm with you. I mean, like, base level, right? They put out an album, right? And that's purely audio, right? And you listen mm-hmm. to it, you like them, maybe you go see them live. And then that's kind of the pinnacle, right? They put on a show. And they have a visual aspect to it, like it's, but they're kind of confined to just a stage and maybe some screens and maybe some pyrotechnics and lasers or whatever, and that's kind of it. But I'm with you. If they could just completely make an entire experience of an album, like an hour experience of what this music is, or maybe a storyline with it or whatever it is, like, that'd just be incredible, like an entirely new connection.
Awesome. And I think there's a lot of, I mean, I'm no business expert, but I think there's some different models you can explore where maybe if you go to the concert, you get the virtual concert for free as well. Yeah. And so it's like a bundle package, which mm-hmm. motivates you to go in person. But then afterwards, you could get the VR experience of it too. And
that's amazing.
It could be really cool to see what you do there. And I think there's a lot of ways where people can be happy with how much money comes out of it, whether it be the agents, producers, the concert venue goers, whatever it might be. But I don't know what that looks like. It's just, it's fun to think that there are more opportunities there.
Yeah, completely unexplored too. I mean, that'd be incredible.
We didn't even know it's possible a decade ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing to me. Okay, well, I don't want to take too much of your time. I have one last question for you, though. So just for the near future, like, what should people, like, keep a lookout for? Like, what's the next thing that we should all be very excited for?
Have you heard of the game The Last of Us?
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. So Sony Studios, Naughty Dog, really, which is now umbrellaed under Sony mm-hmm. Studios, they pushed that game out, and it was a cinematic experience from start to end. It's emotional, it's gripping. I think gaming is going to intersect a lot more heavily with our daily lives in terms of storytelling and consumer media. And we're already seeing that with The Mandalorian and all the Star Wars movies that use virtual production sets. I would encourage people to be more open to seeing what game engines are capable of and even trying to hack at it themselves and learn how to use the tools because they're literally all free. And with the advent of cloud computing, you don't even need a powerful PC to do programming. You could remote into a machine off your iPad and just start programming. I think that people are going to be a lot more surprised when they realize gaming and movies are starting to become one and the same. And that's where I see things heading in the near term, and something that really excites me.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like Choose Your Own Adventure, but way more interesting. Like Absolutely. If that was a thing in a movie, or games already have that inherently, but like, yeah.
So with that, actually, although I haven't seen any work with it yet, Dreamscape, which has ASU Dreamscape Learned or focus on the education in VR, Dreamscape also, from what I read in a book from 2021, I think it was like The Future is Faster Than You Think was the book. Apparently AMC Theaters and Dreamscape partnered together, and the idea was, they didn't get into specifics, but my thought was, maybe you're going to enter a movie theater one day and there's actually no seats, just a couple of VR headsets, and you all go through this crazy cinematic experience where things might pop out at you, like you literally can grab things, like feel them, but it's all in VR. It's VR infused. And the films won't be an hour. They might be 10, 15, 20 minutes, but that's enough to get a crazy experience out of it. So that seems like it's near term. That's something I'm interested in trying to work on.
Oh, that's incredible. Oh, that'd be so cool. Oh, man. Yeah, the future's bright on that. Speaking of which, actually, I went to Wonder Spaces. It's kind of like an art exhibit thing. I don't know if you went to that, but they had like a virtual reality experience where everyone was in the same room, put on a headset, and then everyone is going through the same exact thing. You can see people, but little like animated characters coming out. It's like a very, I don't know, almost like drug fueled experience is what it felt like. It was like very bright, very vibrant colors, and all these characters coming up to you and like dance with you. And it was just like a 3-minute experience of a song, but it was like that. It was that like dumbed down, right? Like it wasn't a cinematic experience, nothing like that, but it was like
still enough.
It was bare bones. Yeah. But it worked. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, and then you can see people and like, they are seeing you as well. Like, and you can like interact with people. Yeah. Amazing. So yeah, I could see that in a cinematic setting with a $500 million budget with a Marvel movie or something. That'd just be like incredible. It'd be mind blowing. Amazing.
One day.
And I think that's kind of the mantra of this entire conversation.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Can you tell people like where to find you, where to find your work, that kind of thing?
Well, thanks for having me. My full name, Ali Reza Behrman. If you Google it, hopefully it pops up. But I'm all over social media, and I'm definitely open to discussions, questions, anything might you. And whenever I have the time, I usually try to do user studies where I recruit people from not just the university. So if people want to try stuff out, I don't know what the time period is on that, but I definitely love to get the tech in the hands of people.
Amazing. Thank you so much, man.
Yep, absolutely.